This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Puerto Rico, trapped between colonialism and hurricanes. By way of introduction of Nelson Dennis, a former New York State Assemblyman who was the author of The War Against All Puerto Ricans, Revolution and Terror in America's Colony, who joins us now as we examine Puerto Rico between a rock and a hard place, between colonialism and hurricanes. And Nelson, you wrote a wonderful piece that was published in the New York Times, and I want to get straight into it. So amidst President Trump's visit Puerto Rico, there is a humanitarian crisis, but there has been a crisis that preceded the hurricane. Talk to us about that and talk to us about your thoughts and your concerns about what can be done. And I know it's relevant to the Jones Act, and our listeners are going to find out a lot more about that. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Mimi. And you always take a really critical time. And right now, as you said, it is a rock and a hard place. And there's a historical context that I think is useful for people to recall. The United States went in 1898, pursuant to the Spanish-American War in Puerto Rico. The very next year, in 1899, was a hurricane even larger than Hurricane Maria. It was called Hurricane San Ciriaco, the most devastating hurricane of the 19th century, of the entire century. And it leveled the island. And the United States response was in the following year, which would then be the year 1900, they devalued the Puerto Rican currency by 40%. So that was a sort of a Naomi Klein shock doctrine response rather than hurricane relief. And there's a real concern now that there's something comparable afoot. We have a Promesa legislation, a financial control board that is basically a credit collection agency for hedge funds and the Jones Act. And between the two of those and this hurricane, Puerto Rico is completely against the ropes. So this is a time for people to be aware that something really, a tectonic shift has to occur in Puerto Rico right now to avoid a complete humanitarian crisis.
The crony capitalism of the Jones Act does not protect anyone, and it is choking the economy of Puerto Rico. We said we were going to tell our listeners more about the Jones Act, which you featured in your piece in the New York Times. Do that for us and talk about how critical it is to respond to the Jones Act at this particular point in time.
That act has a unique and really historic evolution. It was promulgated in 1920. It's the Merchant Marine Act of 1920. And the historic element is that it was a response to a fear of German U-2 boats, which had sunk over 5,000 ships in the Atlantic during World War One. And so the Jones Act was a protective measure to protect that Atlantic naval routes, mercantile routes, the U.S. coastline, and ships. And in its application, it mandates that only U.S. boats can be chartered from one U.S. port to another. But only U.S. boats are allowed to do that, not foreign registry vessels. And that in Puerto Rico, the application of this is twofold. Any foreign registry vessel that does come into Puerto Rico is only allowed to do so under the tenets of the Jones Act with a set of taxes, fees, duties, all sorts of costs that are then passed on to the Puerto Rican consumer. That's if the foreign registry vessel goes directly to Puerto Rico. The only option to that under the Jones Act is that it reroutes that vessel can go to Jacksonville, Florida, where all the goods are offloaded, the original boat, then reloaded onto a U.S. boat, and then that boat reroutes into Puerto Rico. It's the equivalent of digging a ditch to fill it up again. And yet again, the costs that are passed on to the Puerto Rican consumer, which amounts to about close to 20% for anything that's on that ship. And yeah, Puerto Rico, which is an island, it's a small island, needs to import virtually everything, including, this is really key, oil. It has to import its oil, and the electrical grid in Puerto Rico runs entirely on oil. So all its electricity is dependent on the on this foreign import. But it's coming under the auspices of the Jones Act, so it's overpriced. Right now here in New York, we pay about 9 cents per kilowatt hour, and Puerto Ricans pay about 25, nearly triple the electricity rate that we do. That's just as an example. And the the major component in that is the Jones Act. So it affects everything. It affects food, everything that is critical right now in Puerto Rico, food, water, medicine, building materials, the oil for the electricity, all of that is coming in under the Jones Act. And it's been strangling Puerto Rico since 1920. There's no more U-2 boats. There's none lurking off the coast of Puerto Rico. But we do have a Jones Act, which is a greater security threat than any other perceived foreign threat in the world. So that is what that Puerto Rico is facing, this tremendous price gouging, which allows U.S. corporations to just charge their goods at a slightly lower rate than the foreign registry vessel goods. And thereby it creates, turns Puerto Rico into a captive market. It's an international price rigging scheme. And it's for that reason that the United States, that Puerto Rico is the fifth largest market for U.S. products. Fifth largest market in the world. There's more Walgreens and Walmarts per square mile in Puerto Rico than anywhere else on the planet. Mm. And it's all under the hyperinflated protection of the Jones Act. And so this is a time, if there's any real meaningful, any substantial concern to the people of Puerto Rico, the one clearest way for the United States to evince that concern is to suspend the Jones Act in Puerto Rico.
You're actually saying then that you don't believe that there would be a public for Puerto Rico if the Jones Act did not exist. Well, is that saying too much?
So the numbers are there. The numbers are really clear. The Jones Act, various studies, not me, studies have been conducted, and it's anywhere from the estimates have been anywhere from $3 to $6 billion a year, some are higher. But if you do the simple math, even at the lower rate of $3 billion a year, 3 times 98, because the Jones Act has been in existence since 1920, 3 times 98 is just shy of $300 billion. I think that would be $294 billion. So therefore, the public debt of Puerto Rico would have been paid 4 times over by if they hadn't the Jones Act didn't exist. It's pretty clear. I mean, the numbers are there. Mm. So that's when I always put quotation marks around this debt, because this debt was essentially created by the plenary jurisdiction of the U.S. Congress. But now we're facing a supposed debt, a financial control board, a Jones Act, and a hurricane all together, all at once.
Hmm. Continue to tie in for us, like suspending or repealing the law, you indicate, is crucial to the arduous rebuilding process ahead. I know, I remember in one town alone, 70,000 people were evacuated because of a failing dam. How would the Jones Act relief enable residents, for example, to buy materials or rebuild? Make that connection for us.
It's a simple one, straightforward. All you just see is the all-inclusiveness of the Jones Act. It applies to everything, and Puerto Rico has to import virtually everything. Back when the United States came in, agriculture was about 70 to 80% of the Puerto Rico gross national product and their economy. Agriculture was over 70%. It is now less than 1%. So literally, Puerto Rico isn't feeding itself. It imports food. It imports food, water, the oil for the electricity, medicine, every aspect. It's like, you're a fish swimming in an ocean. So Puerto Rico is in that ocean. Everywhere, everything that is purchased and consumed in Puerto Rico is penetrated by the Jones Act. So it affects every aspect of just everyday life. And the per capita income in Puerto Rico is roughly $17,000 a year, less than half that of Mississippi, the poorest state in the United States. So Puerto Ricans are extremely price sensitive. Anything that can save them a few pennies is critical. And it's for that reason the United States, the U.S. corporations have been benefiting enormously. The same car in U.S. made automobile costs $6,000 more in San Juan than it does in Miami. Food across the board costs twice as much in Puerto Rico than it does in the U.S. mainland. The same food, the same breadbasket of food. All of these things are coming in under the auspices of the Jones Act. So to suspend the Jones Act would be single-handed to eliminate this international price-rigging scenario. And in the longer run, it would allow Puerto Ricans to develop their own inherent shipping economy, their own admiralty, be able to negotiate their own internal pricing structure. It is a foundational way to allow Puerto Ricans once and for all, to develop their own private economy. It's for that reason that the public sector of Puerto Rico is so explosive, and you have 78 mayoralties and so many bloated government bureaucracy and the large payroll that help to create this public debt, because there's no private sector. There's no private economy. Well, lifting the Jones off the neck of Puerto Rico would allow that a private economy to develop. So in the short run, in terms of emergency hurricane relief, getting food, water, medicine, electricity up, there's an island-wide blackout still in Puerto Rico, which is projected to last for several months. And it's for that reason that most people have been able to speak with their family members. All of those things would immediately be affected. There'd be more access to all of that. And then you would have the jumpstart of the Puerto Rican economy. And all of this would flow from relieving it from Jones Act relief.
Nelson Dennis, the island, which you point out, is the fifth largest market in the world for American products. There are more Walmarts and Walgreens per square mile in Puerto Rico than anywhere else on the planet. And at the same time, you know, you wind up with, you've pointed out in your article, there are three American territories that are exempt from the Jones Act, including the United States Virgin Island. How did this come about, and how do we now respond, and where does the pressure get put to begin to eliminate this stranglehold, this shakedown, as somebody described it, this kind of mafia protection racket with Puerto Rico as a captive market?
Well, the way it developed is that Puerto Rico was always a profit center. First, it was a naval coaling station back in 1898, but then very quickly they became aware that the agriculture, the soil, the climate was perfect in Puerto Rico to turn it into a one crop cash cow economy that is sugar, and accordingly the United States managed to become the owner of roughly 80% of Puerto Rico's arable land within the first 30 years. By 1930. And after that, then progressed into becoming a tax haven for U.S. corporations, and most notably until recently, the pharmaceutical company. And they would provide employment in Puerto Rico, but under completely tax-protected circumstances, and none of those corporations would engage in any infrastructure investment or pay any particular taxes to Puerto Rico. So when the 20-year tax exemptions would expire, they would all just leave the island and create a constant cycle of employment and unemployment, boom and bust, complete dependence on U.S. corporations, but always profitable for U.S. corporations. From that, now it's evolved into a triple tax exempt municipal bond haven, and Puerto Rico is the only jurisdiction that's been able to issue those, and that's one reason why statehood, I feel, is not anywhere on the horizon very soon. So it's always been a relationship where the United States is benefiting economically in a huge, in some ways undisclosed ways, because the U.S. taxpayers aren't very often, they don't concern, they have a lot of things to worry about. They don't know about the Jones Act, about the triple tax exempt bonds, or they don't think about it, they think it through. But it is all part of a larger fabric of a highly one-sided economic relationship, and that's what's evolved in Puerto Rico. And there's been a lack of advocacy because Puerto Rico is essentially a small island, 1,500 miles separated by 1,500 miles of ocean from Washington, D.C. and from New York. And so its presence is not felt. It does not have a congressional representative. And now with Citizens United, the loudest voices in Puerto Rico, in Washington, are the ones that carry a checkbook. Mm. So the response would need to be a high degree of awareness and pressure, especially on the House Committee on Natural Resources, which is chaired by Jim Young. They're the ones that wrote the PROMESA legislation and created the Financial Control Board. And they're the ones that tabled an amendment from Congressman Gary Palmer, who sought to add Jones Act relief to structure that into the PROMESA legislation. He proposed an amendment that would make that a part of the Financial Control Board and the PROMESA bill that, yeah, we're going to do all that, but we're also going to enable Puerto Ricans to have an economy so that they can pay these debts and so that they won't incur them in the future. Well, Congressman Jim Young tabled that immediately as non-germane to the bill, which basically demonstrated very clearly what the purpose of the bill was, which is to be just a credit collection agency for hedge funds. Well, there has to be a concerted effort to change that philosophy and to have the essential self-sustaining economic activity in Puerto Rico be a part of how Washington views Puerto Rico, or if not, Puerto Rico will never get off the mat. It'll never get back on its feet.
And I would like to ask you a kind of final question just to clarify, and then we're going to continue to pick up the discussion about the rebuilding of Puerto Rico with David Galarza. But it's not just clearly about recovering from Hurricane Maria. It is also about Puerto Rico's long-term future. If the Jones Act were suspended, what would happen to consumer prices? What would happen to the modernization of the infrastructure? What would happen to the rebuilding of Puerto Rico?
Well, you've actually just answered it. The price gouging would end. It would be immediate. Virtually everything consumed in Puerto Rico would now cost 15% to 20% less. So you've capsulized that in the question that you asked. The infrastructure would be potentially in a position to be modernized rather than to just be public-private partnerships, which is where this Jones Act scenario is leading. Where it's leading is that any redevelopment and rebuilding efforts will be utterly dependent on U.S. capital, which will then attach public-private partnership component to all of that, and basically as a way of wedging U.S. ownership over the entire public, over the public infrastructure of Puerto Rico, the ports, the highways, airports, schools, bridges, anything that's government-owned is now fair game as a quote-unquote P3, a public-private partnership, but it's really P5, public-private partnerships for the plunder of Puerto Rico. Mm. That's where we're headed if we don't have some progressive legislation and outlook, such as revising or suspending the Jones Act. All of these things will flow from suspending the Jones Act. Immediate hurricane relief and the opportunity to rebuild the Puerto Rican infrastructure. And what the United States does over the next month or two will very clearly demonstrate what is in the hearts of the U.S. power structure with respect to Puerto Rico.
Well, Nelson Dennis, thank you for spending some time with us. Nelson Dennis, former New York State Assemblyman, is the author of, and you must, it's a must-read book, War Against All Puerto Ricans, Revolution and Terror in America's Colony. And we want to have you back very soon to continue to talk about this critical issue for Puerto Rico, which really is caught between the rock and the hard place, which we denote as between colonialism and the hurricanes. Thanks a lot for being with us.
I appreciate the time, Amy. We'll talk again.
And we are now joined by David Galarza, a long-term labor and nationalist activist around Puerto Rico. And I wonder if you have any particular thoughts relevant to what Nelson Dennis has been talking about elimination of suspension of the Jones Act. And then I know that you were particularly concerned about some of the environmental issues that really precipitated the severity of the damage that was done by Hurricane Irma and Maria. And thanks for joining us, David.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Mimi. And it's always a pleasure to hear and be following Nelson Dennis, who I consider such an important member of our community, and whose book, like you mentioned, A War Against All Puerto Ricans, is a critical read now more than ever, just because of all the dynamics and all the things that are coming to pass that he's always talked about and always written about and always spoken about throughout Puerto Rico and throughout the U.S. And so, yeah, definitely in terms of the Jones Act, that would help the elimination of the Jones Act, specifically those cabotage laws that are so outdated, would definitely be a boon to Puerto Rico. We fully support that call to end the cabotage laws, specifically those cabotage laws, because they're just so outdated. Additionally to that, you know, Nelson talked about the debt. On Monday, the hedge clippers, you know, joined with New York Communities for Change, Senator Gustavo Rivera, Hector Figueroa, the president of Local 32BJ of the SEIU, and many other activists, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement, we made a call on the steps of City Hall to also suspend or cancel the debt in Puerto Rico, specifically the debt dealing with the agency, the electric company, the public entity there that owes billions and billions of dollars to these bondholders. And right now is not a time to try to squeeze money out of Puerto Rico. Like I said during the press conference, you can't get blood from a stone. For us, Puerto Rico is our rock, our stone, and the people in Puerto Rico are our blood. And we cannot squeeze a single penny, a single cent Puerto Rico right now, because everything needs to be committed to the rebuilding process in Puerto Rico. So that's of utmost importance. And I would urge everybody, not just Puerto Ricanos, but everybody, to keep that issue on the limelight and to make that call to their elected officials, because Oppenheimer Group and the Blue Mountain Capital and all these hedge fund vultures that created that first storm, which is the austerity storm, which is the Promesa and the Junta that now governs the financial conditions in Puerto Rico, and basically calls the shots on just about everything there, because it's colonial government to begin with, and now this Junta, unelected, unaccountable to anybody, is calling the shots financially, and they think they're being generous by freeing up $1 billion to this effort, and that's not enough. You know, that's going to be a drop in the bucket. Puerto Rico is going to need billions and billions and billions of dollars to rebuild, and that debt was already illegal and questionable to begin with, which is why they never allowed it a bona fide audit, independent audit of that debt. And so that's why we're calling for a moratorium, short of a moratorium, an absolute cancellation of that debt. Mimi, you talked about the environmental aspect in Puerto Rico, and I'm sorry for going on. You tell me, you know,
no, not at all, not at all.
Please interrupt me at any point. But in terms of the environment right now in Puerto Rico, it's not only, you know, being hit with Maria was hard enough, but we have at the very least some 23 Superfund sites, toxic sites all over the island. We have like 27 landfills all over Puerto Rico that are out of compliance. We had the situation where you've reported in the past, and people continue to protest against the dumping of toxic ashes in the town of Peñuelas and in Humacao and other places in Puerto Rico. These are ashes that are generated by a dirty coal burning facility in the southern part of Puerto Rico to produce electricity. And there was a 5-story pile of ashes prior to Maria. That company that's based in Arlington, Virginia, AES, was told to cover it, and of course they didn't. So we can only surmise that all those ashes were spread all over Puerto Rico. So the air, the land, the water in Puerto Rico is absolutely polluted. So it's an environmental disaster of epic proportions right now, which is what, you know, which is interesting at a time such as this, it's a critical time. The EPA pulled out because for them supposedly it was too dangerous for their personnel. At a time when Puerto Ricanos need to have that air, land, and water tested, the agency that's responsible for keeping people, U.S. citizens in Puerto Rico, which is what they are, safe, is not doing its job, which is, you know, dereliction of duty, which is absolutely abominable and shameful that people are left to their own devices like that. So that's something that needs to be highlighted, and something that, you know, folks also need to be very mindful of, especially during the aid process, the rebuilding process. In today's paper in Puerto Rico and in Nuevo Dia, Casa Pueblo, Arturo Masol, who's a spokesman for Casa Pueblo, which is an organization that I absolutely adore because of what they're doing in Puerto Rico, made a call to to the diaspora and to anybody else that wants to help to Puerto Rico that if they're going to donate goods, especially goods to help light homes, to donate solar-powered bulbs and solar-powered flashlights and that sort of thing. We don't need to have more batteries and landfills, and we don't need more disposable things that will end up in these landfills. And we have to start
And we have about 30. We have about 30 seconds, David. So perhaps you can give us the information about the organization, so people can get in touch with them and make their contributions through that important organization. And of course, we're going to begin continuing this discussion in the weeks and days to come. We know we want to suspend the Jones Act. We should eliminate the debt from PROMESA. Indeed, we should get rid of the junta. And where can people make the contributions?
Well, to this one specifically, this organization is at casapueblo.org, which is CASAPUEBLO.org. Again, CASAPUEBLO.org. And there are many other frontline organizations that deserve our support, deserve our donations. I would urge people not to give to the big, you know, disaster industrial complex. That money gets murky, and we never know what really gets to our people. So please do the research and donate to local community-based organizations that are already on the front line, like them and Comedores Sociales and Caño Martín Peña. There's some dynamic organizations doing that work, and they have been doing the work for years.
And we're going to have to leave it there.
Okay. Thank you for meeting
us. And I want to thank you so much for the work that you always do and continue to keep us posted on this horrific humanitarian crisis. And we say that Puerto Rico really is between the hard rock of colonialism and the hurricane, and we have to address both. We've been speaking with David Galarza, who we will continue to have join us in the weeks and months to come. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.